This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What's up, AfterBuzzers and Fanchies? Welcome to the recap show for episodes 1 and 2 of Banshee this final season. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, Fanchies, we are buzzing tonight because we are recapping episode 1 and 2 from this final season. I'm your host, Oriana Leo, and my co-captain tonight...
Yeah, my name is Isaac Johnson. You can follow me on Twitter at Isaac Johnson or Instagram, the Isaac Johnson.
You can also follow me on those things at Oriana Leo. We have some very special surprise news for you tonight, Fanchies. We did have Adam Targum coming, and he's here, and he brought a very special guest with him, Jonathan Trapper.
What's up, guys?
Hi.
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 Welcome. I'm sorry we didn't have an episode, we didn't have a recap show last week. All my fault. It's my brain.
Solely your fault.
Yeah, but now you're getting 2 for the price of 1.
Yes!
That's true.
That's right.
It's a bargain deal.
I mean, Isaac, what did you think when this opener happens? Brock's in the woods and finds Sheriff Hood that looks like something out of the Bible.
I was glad to see that Brock is still rocking the beard. That was
by the way,
nice addition. We do have our Rock Spears here as well. I'm also glad to see that Sheriff Hood is rocking himself a pretty long hipster beard there.
It's the Moses beard. Yes.
It was a Moses beard.
And Stark was so happy about wearing that beard.
Was he? No, he wasn't.
No.
Okay.
No,
okay. Because that was my question. I thought it could be real, but
no.
Maybe not.
So I know that I was surprised to see that our precious Rebecca was filleted open.
Yeah,
and that there's this whole new twist on this season. Can you guys shed a little light on why, how? I mean, there's a serial killer on the loose. I was not expecting this.
Well, I was actually listening to Adam do a podcast today where he talked about the fact that, you know, we made a conscious decision with season 4 to really turn the show inward and focus much more on our primary characters instead of bringing in new forces from the outside. And, we wanted some kind of central storyline that was going to give us the chance to unite them all in different ways and form different alliances and different frictions. And we just came up with this idea. I think, you know, it had started out at the end of season 3. Greg Yatanis had kind of floated that, and then Adam and I talked about it for a while, and we just came up with this idea of a murder of one of our major characters that's central to the entire season, which you can only do in your last season, because otherwise... we never would have killed off Rebecca if we knew we had more seasons.
Right. You know, and the selection of Rebecca actually was about finding a character that would actually have a ripple effect amongst all of the characters. Mm-hmm. And she is the one, as you can see in the first 2 episodes. Her death has an impact that you know, resonates through every single one of the characters and will connect all the storylines this season moving forward.
Right. And we're getting to know these characters even better. I feel like I can never predict what's next because you'll never know.
Yeah.
We know.
Okay,
will you tell us
know.
Right
well, we know now?
No, I loved all of that. There was like almost to me, like especially with him up in that cabin, like almost like a post-apocalyptic feel or something like that. I thought maybe some zombies would be there coming to him or something.
But his world ended.
Yes, it did.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, think about, he was in prison for this, you know, heist gone wrong. Like, he's just suffered, and everywhere he goes, everyone suffers, and he felt the gravity of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the combination of he's never really fully recovered from Siobhan's death in season 3. And then on top of that, to lose Job, who's really his rock and his best friend. And, this, you know, in a way, like, the real love story of Banshee is Job and Lucas. Mm-hmm. And to lose Job and really not have any idea how to get him at that point, he sort of was crushed by the weight of all that responsibility.
Yeah, and there's something interesting about a guy that spent so much time in prison who has been institutionalized basically put himself in this self-imposed exile and to remove himself from everybody that he cares about so that he can't hurt anybody else. And then, you know, there's the great moment in season 3 is Brock says to him, everything you touch turns to blood.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, and that has certainly stuck with him.
And there's a line, I think it's in season 2, that Sugar says to him, you know, when you're a convict, you build your own cell. You don't need anybody to do it for you.
Interesting.
And that's kind of what Lucas is doing in season four.
So we come, we see the new Banshee, right? It's an upgraded, sexy, got a budget. I'm like, look at those Jeeps.
Actually, it's we had less of a budget than
funny
season
story.
Three. It's just we moved locations. We moved from Charlotte to Pittsburgh, and so, which was another reason why the 2 year jump really helped, is we could make things look a bit different. The cars were all, you know, Adam's our car guy. He just negotiated all those cars.
Okay.
So
yes, we were just very clever with a product placement this season,
so
and
I know,
made a great deal with General Motors, and we made a great deal with
Mercedes
Benz, who provided the new Proctor Mobile. Again, which was time for, you know, Proctor, who's stepping up, becoming a more important force in the town, becoming the mayor, to drive something a little bit more classy, so to speak.
Everything about this season, once we made the decision it was going to be our last season, like, we wanted everything about it to be some kind of reinvention. On a macro level, everyone in Banshee's already reinvented themselves, so it was time for us to reinvent the show a little bit. And you know, we took a lot of pleasure in sort of saying, you know, what's Banshee 2.0 for that
season? Sheriff Lotus has an espresso machine in his office.
Yeah, and he apparently knows how to work it.
I was impressed. we know that Proctor is the mayor, and we see Rebecca filleted like that. I have to say, I personally think it was a little gratuitous. I was so upset by it. Was that the point, to just really upset us all?
Well, the point is, if they were looking at those pictures, you know, in a police station, and it wasn't one of the stars, you would look at it and you'd be, oh, that's a gross picture, and you'd move on. Mm-hmm. The reason I think you were shocked is because it was Rebecca.
Sure. It's personal to us.
Yeah. It was personal.
Loved her for three seasons. Yeah.
I actually kind of hated her, but I still didn't want her to see her like that.
There's also a rhyme or reason to what was done to her and why it was done to her the way that it was done. And, and you know, that's one thing that I'm so proud of, is that we take so much time in making sure that all of the story threads actually pay off and are interwoven. Nothing is there, you know, to use your term, gratuitously.
I'm scared now, because I don't remember what we reveal in episode 2 versus 3, but there's a reason she was filleted like that.
Yes.
But I have a prediction about that later.
Save that. Hold your horses.
I have a question, though. Proctor is the mayor, but he's still very much active in his old life, it seems like. That's probably like a prediction kind of question. So,
again,
I don't know if there's a way to ask it without being like, this sort of seems like there's some repercussions of Rebecca's double dealings from last season. Some time has passed. Maybe she's kind of grown beyond control, and maybe this is something.
Yeah, they can't say. I literally wrote a note that said, "Is Rebecca an asshole?" Because I felt like she was an asshole second episode.
Everyone on Banshee's an asshole. Come on.
So we kind of get reintroduced to all these characters. We meet Detective Cruz, Anna Arroyo.
Who I don't trust at all.
No, but she's an awesome.
Well, we don't really. That's not a spoiler. We don't really make a secret of it.
One. She's quite strong.
She's in Kai's pocket.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we see that Carrie is kicking ass, breaking hands, which seemed really personal.
Loved that scene. That was so cool.
So did I, but ouch.
Yeah, I have to say, I think Ivana is doing just amazing work. She did amazing work this season, but there's so much dimension to her character this season, between just, you know, having her kids taken away from her and going through the court and imposed therapy sessions, but also finding other outlets for herself. And of course, you know, we saw in episode 2, she is also working with Bunker.
With Bunker, yeah.
So again, everything sort of comes full circle in this season. Our focus was about making it really about the denizens in this town. And they are all assholes, but sometimes, you know, assholes, you know, work well with other assholes.
And she's really trying to, you know, preserve Gordon's legacy because, you know, simply put, she got him killed.
Right.
And
Oops.
So now, you know, she's trying to, you know, do what he wanted to do, which is clean up the town. She's not doing it the way he was doing it, but you know, because there's a, you know, pretty much a crooked DA in his place, she's trying to undo everything that crooked DA does.
In the DA's defense, I'd be scared shitless of Proctor. I'd do whatever he said.
Or Burton sitting right behind you.
By the way, Burton, Maddie Rausch, hi. He speaks.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I don't know. I'm actually more afraid of him now.
I think the only person more excited about that was Matt Rauch.
You know, Matt's a Shakespearean actor, and, you know, he does Macbeth, and he does these big, long soliloquies, and then we hire him, and we give him, like, two words of dialogue per season, so.
But does more with those two words of dialogue than just about almost any other actor out there with a lot more dialogue.
Yeah, he doesn't require the dialogue.
I also noticed less glasses aren't on.
Well, I see the glasses come off when he's going to get into action.
They come off when
they come off, but I see. I feel like I'm seeing
Superman
his bare face a little
he takes
more.
Them off.
No,
you have because he's killing more people.
Well, yeah, I did make a note of that. I thought Burton really likes to watch people die.
Yes.
So maybe he's the bad guy.
Yeah, there's a great moment at the end of 2 where he's watching Proctor kill LJ, who may or may not have been, fornicating with his niece, who allegedly he does not care about. I don't care who my niece is with.
Right.
I didn't believe him
as
when he said that.
Yeah,
but there's just a great, you know, Matt Rauch, Burton head tilt in there where he watches with, and you don't know if it's jealousy or fascination or appreciation of the art.
Yeah.
But it's masterful with what he can convey with so little.
I got a bit of judging in there, like, oh, that's not how you do that. Like, to me, that's kind of what it was on his face, death by, like, bass string there.
But, you know, that's how Matt originally got the gig. He did a taped audition. He got it off the tape. We didn't even call him in because his interpretation of the character was this thing where, you know, we had written that he takes off his glasses, but he did this thing where the minute he takes off his glasses, his eyes kind of go dead, and he gets this glassy look, and he just, he walked off screen in his own tape of the audition. He did this thing, and, like, as soon as we saw it, we're like, that's the guy. He sort of invented what Burton does.
That's amazing. I love that line. I don't know who wrote this, but Brock has mentioned that when he says, "How's Swing Sheriff?" he said it feels like a hemorrhoid. I love that because Proctor ensures that's his experience.
Well, Servito has, I think, completely come into his own. Not that he has not always been an incredible actor in every show that he's done, but certainly in Banshee as well. But this season really is the season of Brock in a lot of ways.
He's shown up.
Yeah, but he came into his own. It's we had to come into our own writing him. It's, you know, Brock was never meant to survive past season one. It was always planned that he dies at the end of season one. And halfway through season one, we all just realized we didn't want to kill him. And then we had to take him from a slightly flatter character, which was just, you know, the fun spoiler, and give him real dimension until he really did become eventually, you know, the moral center of the show.
Yeah, I also got him taken when he kind of confronts the, I guess, hillbillies, we'll call them, at the when he saves Hood's Bacon there.
The mountain people.
The mountain people.
The Bodekers.
The Bodekers, yeah. When he saves him there, and then the guy kind of gives him lip, and he butts him with the gun. You get like a flash of Hood looking at him like
a little smile. Like.
It was like he's taking a little page
young
out of his book. Like,
yes.
Exactly.
The infamous Sarah Palin T-shirt.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
I was so against that.
I was so excited to see that.
Yeah. I think it started as a joke in one of our
meetings. It was a joke that, you know, you can't joke around wardrobe and set deck because they take their jobs very seriously. And even when you say it in jest, it shows up on set.
I think we had a conversation where it was in just description, you know, it's a guy that, you know, wears like a Sarah Palin T-shirt. And a month later, we showed up on set and the guy's wearing a Sarah Palin T-shirt.
That's amazing.
It did get a lot of laughs and a lot of attention. Yeah. So
it's a bit
heavy-handed, but I was watching the screening over at UTA where we got to interview a bunch of people. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but that was one of my giggle out loud moments. It just was so good, so thank you. Moving right along, the head vice. Can I just say that was really appropriate for me missing the last episode? Have you had a migraine? You've had a migraine. You know that that's what that's like.
Yes, yeah. It hurts.
I think we all have those.
So we see in the scene that Proctor and the Nazis are working together, as well as the Red Bones. They've got their own relationship going.
Mm-hmm. Well, Proctor's needed to establish distance. Now that he's the mayor, he's still running his empire, but he needs to be one step. He needs some plausible deniability, so he's gone into business with the neo-Nazis.
Great idea.
What could go wrong?
It's going to work out well for everybody.
Right?
Quite
likely.
Especially Calvin.
Yes, Calvin. What a character. Really enjoying watching him unravel.
You know, I'll tell you, it's writing a character like that for all of us, it's never an easy thing to write when you're putting words that have such hate and vitriol on the page. Mm-hmm. And then to watch someone like Chris Coy, who brings them to life so chillingly.
We're all kind of scared of
Chris. Well, actually, he explained to me on the carpet that he grew up around some of that stuff, and he used that to give the character meaning. You know, he's a family man, and I think we really see that in the second episode.
But in a way, you know, that there's such a truth to his performance that, you know, the distastefulness of it and how vile it truly is comes across even more. But like every character in Banshee, there is a reason why he is the way that he is, and everything has an origin story behind you know, behind the story. You know, monsters are not made. I'm sorry, they're not born, they're made.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's yet another, you know, situation where upbringing may not have worked out so well for him.
It's interesting to see him, who's still so fully sold into that life, and his brother Kurt, who's on the other end of it, but then also, at the same time, maybe getting some revenge.
Right.
I mean, obviously, we saw him being burned at the end of last season.
Maybe a woman between them, you know, things
happen. Yeah, exactly. Well, getting some revenge in that way, and I wondered if, I'm not sure.
Oh, he doesn't know.
He doesn't know, but is... I guess I'm wondering, is the reason because of the burning, or is the reason because of some other...
Well, he was going after them before they burned him. That's why they burned him. His plan was to shut them down as his own form of penance.
He said, I burned you because it saved your life, essentially.
But the irony is that, you know, what you learn in these episodes is that, you know, Kurt's the one who brought Calvin into it.
He says that
to him in the first or second episode, and you realize, like... Kurt's the one who brought Calvin into it, and then Kurt, you know, got religion, and now he's trying to get Calvin out, but Calvin is committed.
Yeah, and if you remember in episode 5 of season 3, you know, where Bunker opens up
written by Adam Targo. Well, if you remember from the episode I wrote.
It's quite a good episode. It also happens to be the episode where Bunker opens up to Metting. And talks about his indoctrination into the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of parallels.
Are we going to see her again?
No, we have a new DA who's in Proctor's pocket. Yeah. And obviously, he wasn't going to keep Metting around.
Yeah, and after the, you know, the trauma that she went through in 305, she needed some time.
She needed some time.
Yeah. You'll just like see her head in his glove compartment one day.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
It's possible. But just going back, you know, a little spoiler here, but a lot of those storylines between the Bunker brothers will sort of be expanded and opened up in future episodes. You'll get to understand a little bit more about the relationship and the origin of their relationship.
Yeah,
I'm curious about Peggy. Is it Peggy? Is his wife? No?
Maggie.
Sorry.
I was going to say, it's interesting because, you know, you have his brother who's so hate-filled, and I don't enjoy watching that character, even though I enjoy the performance. But the character that I find myself connecting with the most is Kurt. Which is just, I don't know, it says something about the writing that you can like this character so much. I also like that he's still
it's also
that
the acting.
Face tattoo removed.
We can't say enough about Tom Pelfrey.
Yeah, he came in last season.
He is the real deal.
Like that character, like so many characters, you look at a character like Job, you look at a character like, you know, Kurt Bunker, like these are characters that no matter whether we wrote them well or not, they could go so wrong in the performance.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you get someone like Hoon playing Job or Tom playing Kurt, and they bring a humanity to it that sells it beyond whatever's on the surface.
And by the way, the entire cast and crew that was at the premiere in L.A., just the nicest people. Mm-hmm. You guys, I can see why you would be a family after such
experience. Yeah, we really had a no-asshole policy. We would ask about anyone we were hiring. We would, like, ask other shows they'd been on. Like, you're going to live with somebody in Charlotte or Pittsburgh. You can't have somebody come in and be sort of the poison, in the whole thing.
Which made it even more bittersweet, you know, to say goodbye, because this was a meant to be. You know, you don't always catch lightning in a bottle, but a show like this, it was just the right group of people and the right situation, and it was very special. So
yeah, we would have loved to believe, like, if we decided to end it, we had a little distance and from the cast and from all the people we loved, and we decided to end it, you know, for narrative reasons, because we really felt it was coming to an end, and we didn't want to drag that out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But at the same time, once we got back there and we were in it with them again, it was very hard to think we're not going to, you know, it's weird. It's April now, and normally by now we're down there prepping.
I have been pitched spinoffs by every one of the actors, so everybody wants to do their spinoffs.
Well, so that's one of the fan questions was, is there a possibility? I know I want to see the Job show.
Yeah,
I want to see a Job review.
But I don't know, like, it's like, did the Kramer show work out? Like, I think you know, these characters work together, and giving another one of them their own show. Like, sure. If you had to listen to Job for 60 minutes a week.
I would love that.
Maybe a sitcom. Yeah. Maybe 22 minutes we could get in.
Joey made it for 2 seasons. We have to get about
that. That is true. And he needs to do Joey to get to episodes. I know, and that works really well, so you never know. So
but nobody wants to be the Joey to get you to your episodes. I just want to do episodes.
But so, I am holding out for the Job Brock Lotus Detective Agency in the Caribbean.
I would watch it.
Ooh, I like that. Offshore. Okay, so I wanted to confirm with you guys our timeline, because it's been 2 years, but I feel like the flashbacks we've seen
it's
18
been,
months.
It's been about 18.
18 months, 12 months, 3 months, and then 1 week. Did I miss anything as far as the flashbacks we've seen so far?
We're kind of everywhere in those 18 months we're going to go.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm trying to keep track and put it all together because I love mysteries. So this is extra exciting. We saw Rebecca's new office. In episode 2, this is the right. Burden of Beauty, which very great writing for that scene, by the way. Oh my gosh,
Adam Targum,
great. That was so with the dog. I mean, I'm sorry. Okay, so we'll get there. We see Rebecca's new office, and there's this loving exchange, I guess, if that's what we want to call it, between Proctor and she drops the white scarf, and it's this symbolic, you know. To me, I don't see her as an instrument of peace, and yet she's always wearing white and angelic. What can you tell us about that?
Our costume designer from the first season, Pasha, when Rebecca first comes to live with Proctor, and then he almost immediately throws her out, she did this thing where Proctor was wearing his traditional black suit, and Rebecca comes running to beg him to let her stay, and she's pulled a white comforter around her. And Pasha, it was brilliant, because I didn't realize it until I stood on set and watched it. She basically created the top of a wedding cake, Rebecca looked like a bride and he looked like a groom. And brilliant. Since then, she's always dressed them when they're together in some version, in most cases, as a bride and a groom.
I didn't put that together at all.
No, and there is a
layers.
There is a dichotomy, of course, about, you know, the exterior, their level of purity, and what's really going on inside. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes to every one of the characters on the show, is that everybody lives in the gray, and that's what makes these characters so unique.
Did you guys watch The Killing?
Yeah.
Shades of Gray. Best line of that show, sorry. So in this episode, we see some major ass kicking again, right? We find out that Rebecca visited the ER with some major head trauma, right? Face trauma. And we see later in the episode that these mountain people that keep a rabid dog in a box.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what
as mountain people do.
Is it what they do? That scene was gnarly.
The face trauma wasn't really Rebecca's trauma. That blood on her was barely hers.
That was the ruse.
They washed
to get
it up. She was that. A lot of that blood.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I didn't even put it together.
Yeah, the ruse to get the drugs
for the
Lucas.
Guy.
Right.
And of course, all that Lucas blood is in the back of that SUV. Yeah. That's not looking too good.
Yeah, exactly.
For Lucas.
And that, because I called back to see episode 1, and I thought, oh, they just tested his blood.
I will say much more so than in previous seasons of Banshee. This particular season, you really need to watch carefully, and you need to keep the clues, because we really did take a lot of care in making sure that the mystery.
We did sow, we did sow a lot of seeds and lay a lot of pipe, and you know, it's now clear where the blood in her car comes from, but that is not the big revelation.
Yes.
Speaking of clues, I noticed the Banshee High School reunion in the opening credits.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know if that was. Is there anything in the credits that are going to point to
Jonathan?
I have to be honest. The credits were always Greg Utanis's baby, and he works with Tim Punch Media, who do a great job on that. Mm-hmm. And you know, they kind of by season 3, he kind of had sort of trained them in what we did in the credits. So we are so immersed in the show that we see them and we approve them, but we are really not the brains behind them. That's really Tim Punch Media. And that was Greg's baby, and so we can't actually speak intelligently about it.
There are Easter eggs and other clues hidden in those credits.
Awesome.
We just may not know where they all are, but they're there.
They're there.
I also got, like, this season, because, I mean, season 3 was amazing, and there were so many cool things. The truck driving thing was just one of my favorites. but this season seemed to start out a little bit slower, but there's a lot more, like you guys said, mystery, and it almost feels like kind of like a puzzle that we're just putting the pieces together.
We made a conscious decision to dial back the high octane stuff in favor of something a little darker, more suspenseful, and moments of intense violence and brutality, but less these big set pieces that we took so much pride in previous seasons. You know, when we first sold the show to HBO, this was just as Cinemax began to do original programming, but it was sold more like this kind of show.
Sure.
And then once we moved to Cinemax, Cinemax had this whole high octane thing going on, and we amped up the show, and we ended up finding we really loved that, and the people we worked with were really good at it, and it was great. But for the final season, we wanted to kind of get back to the characters and their emotional journeys, and we very purposely and very consciously made a tonal shift.
That, are you saying there isn't a giant this season?
Well, maybe. But I will say, with all that, and that's very much true, is that we still have plenty of Banshee brand action, and still, when we do set pieces this season and when we do the action, they're still...
Well, this coming week, we've got a big one coming up.
Yeah, a really big one, a very special one, you know, very different than stuff that's done in the past. And that was, you know, that's always been Jonathan's mandate and Greg's mandate from the beginning was, any show can do this, how do we do the Banshee version of it? Sure. So season four, again, exemplifies that. When we do the action and there's plenty of it, it will still be pretty mind-blowing stuff.
And the other thing is that it basically, the way we know we're doing it right is in the week leading up to a big sequence, we basically sit there pulling our hair out going, we are not going to pull this off. In the time we have to shoot this, in the time we have to rehearse this, this day is going to be an absolute disaster. And if we're feeling that up until we shoot it, then we know we're doing it right.
And then everyone shows up and it gets done, right?
Most of the time.
Sometimes. Once in a while we have to...
Sometimes it goes to another day.
We have to beg for, you know, another 8 hours of second unit photography.
But again, we have we had such an incredible team, you know, with O.C. Madsen, you know, our executive producer, director.
Who directed the second episode.
Yes. You know, as well as Marcus Young, who, you know, is our stunt coordinator and designs a lot of those fights. Everybody on our production team, so good. It's the only way to make the size of the show, the scope that we make with the budget that we have, which is not a very large budget.
For what we do.
Yeah. So it's
a nice budget, but not for what we do.
Yeah.
We would love three or four. We would have loved three or four more days per episode.
Oh, okay.
And actually, when we started season four, you know, our line producer, Bob, actually... put in quietly into the schedule an extra day per episode, and we just tried to get slip that through, and then like
they found
the email came right away. No, like you're
yes,
not getting that.
Yes, you know, we tried.
A day is roughly $200,000. Wow. So when you add in, you know, eight extra days, you're adding in, you know.
Well, what do they say? Cool, cool, especially in production, it's always better to ask for forgiveness than permission. Yes. So
follow that rule in general.
We tried that about 3,000-4,000 times.
I see a question,
Bruce. Oh, well, no, just I got that because I do like that it's slowed down, like we were talking about it, because I feel like the show has always had a great blend of like the action with also the depth of character. So I think that's, I don't know, just something that keeps people coming back to it over and over again. Because otherwise, why would you watch it if it was just flat out action? And speaking of some of that, there's still a lot of brutality. The opening scene with the, like, are we about to see a rape on TV? Like, wow. And then it stops short. And
thank goodness.
Oh, thank God we didn't see that. But then we do get to see how Bodicker lost his hand.
We cut that scene back dramatically. There was another...
We shot a bit more.
Yeah, there was another version of that scene that we all watched and literally were so, uncomfortable and horrified by it.
Just about to be here with it. And I thought, oh, thank goodness it didn't happen.
This is weaving in something so morally foul that we see Proctor, I think, in even worse light, you know?
Proctor actually is shutting it down.
He's not shutting it down. He wants his cut, I thought.
No. He's shutting it down, but not on moral grounds. He doesn't want Calvin sidelighting
being distracted.
So his cut is 10% of the pill shop.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he raises his percentage because Calvin was doing some other dirty business.
Were they making meth at all, or is this just a pill shop?
It's not meth.
It's all kind of designer Proctor designer drugs which are actually sweet tarts, and they're really delicious because I sit and pop them all day. But going back to your other point, I don't think that Proctor's morality is like anybody else's on the planet.
No.
You know, it's a sliding scale, and of course, you know, what he's most concerned about, of course, is
money.
Is what's best for him. Mm. But we are also seeing a very different Proctor/Ulrich this season. Mm. And he's affected, you know, by Rebecca's death in a way that I think a lot of people are surprised by how deeply it cuts him and how it's going to color everything that he does this season and maybe, you know, cloud his judgment a little bit on future activities.
Yeah. Well,
my take on Proctor from the beginning has always been that he's a deeply religious man. He really believes in God. He just thinks God's an asshole.
Yeah.
And he's basically going after God the same way he goes after anyone else who he feels screws him.
Totally. I've got him. I mean, obviously he's hiding something. There's something that he's not telling. I'm not going to ask a question because I know you can't answer it. But like, somehow he is connected with what happened to her. To me, a lot of those you know, like sort of long looks that he has, you know, past the camera and that kind of thing, those are him dealing with, I think he knows why she died.
And six more episodes, we
in
can
six,
answer that.
In six
we
can more talk episodes, about we can't that. Answer
we,
that.
We'll like, talk about whether you're right or wrong.
Somehow I'm feeling, and again, you're not going to answer, but somehow I'm feeling that her death was made to look like it's part of the series of killings.
Ooh, I
but
like that.
But it's not. I don't know.
I like that.
That's my thought.
Well, it would be a really strange coincidence if, you know, a serial killer just happened to kill one of our lead actors. Yeah. So.
I feel like in these first two episodes, everyone is a rageaholic and is somebody's bitch. Like, everyone is a bitch to someone. Carrie's a bitch to the therapist in the whole process.
Brock is
Proctor's bitch. Calvin doesn't like being Proctor's bitch. Right? Everybody has a bitch.
What about Lucas? Who's Lucas a bitch to?
Good question. I think Lucas is the lone wolf.
Maybe he's his own bitch.
He's his own bitch.
He's tormenting himself
a little
bit.
I'll also say that, you know, in two episodes, Eliza Dushku's coming. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my prediction questions. Yeah.
But also, Carrie, I'm identifying with Carrie so much just because she loves someone who's not good for her. And a lot of us have experienced that before, of just because you love someone doesn't mean they're the right fit for you. And I want to love Hood. I want to, but he is toxic and he knows it. And I just really feel for her that she doesn't have her kids and these girls are going, you know, dead, missing, the porn thing. Like, she's just on a mission.
How about Deva going behind her back and seeing Lucas? How about that?
Yeah,
I mean, she just keeps taking hits. She keeps taking hits
Ryan,
left and right.
Right?
Yeah.
Hi, Ryan. And hi, Ryan's mom. She's an Oriana Leo fan, so I had to do that. Great haircut, by the way. But I was feeling the same way about Rebecca's death to Hood, of like, you know, why is it having this such an effect? Is it because he's already been responsible for so many deaths? But to find out how she was looking after him, and she was probably the only person other than Deva.
Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun to work that dynamic, because that's a great role reversal when you see how she came to him in season one and wanted his help. And,
right.
You know, and then gradually, you know, they grew apart and he, you know, very frustrated with each other. And, you know, at points in the season, they were really nemeses. And then, you know, down the road when he's suffering so much, she actually threw him an olive branch. And whether she did that out of the goodness of her heart or did that because it might be good to have a guy tucked away who could help you out, like, you know, we don't have an answer for that.
It
does work
out well with her with the Bodekers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she was not going to make it out of the house.
Is that a sickle? What is that?
Yes, I'm going to take credit for the sickle.
I love that.
I'll give Adam the dog in the box.
The dog was actually very sweet. That was a very sweet dog. She was really nice until the trainer gave the command. That was a real dog and a very expensive puppet that we used.
Does it have a blood thing?
There was a lot of blood. But that's actually a very, very difficult sequence for us to pull off, and I think it worked really well. And those two actors as well, who were local guys,
were great. You know, sometimes it's a mixed bag because you have to cast locals very quickly, and those guys turn out to be great.
Okay, yeah. So we need to move to Pittsburgh, just saying. No, Deva, I feel like we're going to see more of her. I'm really worried about those kids being at in-laws. I don't know. It just doesn't sound safe in Banshee. They need to be behind the gate.
Well, they're
Carrie.
Not actually in Banshee. They're
Poughkeepsie, New York.
Poughkeepsie.
I just made that up. But it sounds good.
They're
somewhere.
Not
Banshee. Sound good.
You know, south or north of Banshee.
Yes.
Okay.
Perhaps
Poughkeepsie's a big Adam Tarkin fan, so I just gotta say. Okay.
Perhaps this is a question you can answer. I'll try one
more time. Poughkeepsie is Adam's safe word.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. I don't know if I can ask this question now, but so we got Sugar there sort of putting Hood to the task for waking up about Rebecca's death and going into investigating that. Everybody gave up on Job. They specifically seem to be blaming Lucas for giving up on him. Carrie's still after him. She's got the whole wall of things looking for him. Is there any reason that this has woken him up more so than Job, or does he actually believe that Job is dead?
I was going to see if you were going to jump in on that. My take on it, Adam might have a different one, is that, you know, they really had nowhere else to go on Job, and like the only person who could have found Job is Job.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know, once he killed Dalton, you know, there was no more trail. Mm-hmm. He was very frustrated, and my take on it is him responding to Rebecca's death. First of all, she did throw him a lifeline.
Yeah.
But second of all, it's almost like he's sublimating the guilt over Job into his quest to find her killer. And not to mention, he's got to clear his own name. So there is a selfish motivation.
And I would say, I don't think Lucaswood would ever walk away from the hunt for Job if he didn't truly, deeply believe that Job was dead. That's just not the person that he is.
I think that experience with Dalton, that seemed like that impacted him deeply, you know? And I love, by the way, I love the info, just, you know, kneecaps, insteps. I'm taking notes just in case I need to take somebody out sometime in my...
Yep. And it was great to get David Harbour back. He's wonderful. And it was a lot
of
fun.
It's really hard when we plan this stuff in the writer's room because we're like, it becomes essential to the plot, but we don't know we'll get David Harbour back because, you know, we're thinking, well, it's going to be one day. We'll get him. But he was doing about, you know, he's in like a million movies and TV shows. And in the end, we really, you know, you have to really be willing to shift your schedule around to get these actors back.
And he wanted to do the show, which made it great. Yeah. And he came and it was very impactful.
Was he wearing a silk robe?
I don't know. I didn't wear it myself.
I swear,
so
it looked like he was
silk or a polyester blend.
It's a Hugh Hefner collection.
We kept him away from open flame. but it was interesting to read. A lot of people had, you know, certain suspicions about Dalton and what his role was going to be. And then, as we often do on Banshee, we defy that expectation with a bullet. But again, it was a great plot element for Hood, who was again convinced that Dalton was not going to lead them to Job, and that Job was dead, and that, you know, the only way to, you know, to at least, you know, fill that void and fill that pain was to end this guy's life.
Well, it was a good way for him to come full circle too, because Dalton, in a way, is what created you know, Lucas. Mm-hmm. So
Lucas Hood,
right? Not Lucas, but whatever
his real name is. Yeah.
You know, Gary.
Gary Schwartz.
I forget which guy who had the moment with him, but it's still while Hood's got the beard and they look each other in the face and goes, "You," and he says, "Me," and I'm like, just say his name.
No,
just
that
is Dalton. That is the Dalton.
The Dalton scene. And I'm like, you would know his name.
Do you know what it's taken for four seasons to write around that? To like, because
it's
Carrie
not easy.
Carrie knows his name. Well, she knows one of his names,
and we know her name.
You know, but like every time we did flashbacks, or you know, Rabbit was talking to him in a flashback, or Oleg, or anybody, you had to craft all the dialogue so his name never comes up.
Right.
My inspiration was, obviously, A Fistful of Dollars and those Clint Eastwood movies where you never knew his name, but also this great movie with Daniel Craig, Layer Cake.
Yeah, I love
which was one of his. It was one of his first big films.
Oh yeah,
and you only realize in the last scene of the movie, because he points it out, that you've never learned his name, and you've watched a whole movie about this guy, and it's never occurred to you that they never say his name.
It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do, but
he's like literally Dirty Harry with the beard at one point.
I want to talk a little bit about Calvin and this justice at any cost. Like, he's just become, in two episodes, you know, he was already a bad guy, but I had a question. Who's Watts? Did I miss something? He's
not
the leader.
Yet.
Okay.
Watts is the Grand Dragon or whatever we would call him. It's not the Ku Klux Klan, but he's the regional leader of this movement in this area.
And Calvin seems like he knows what's best and he knows what's better. And that Watts is somehow not kind of
lot more coming with the Bunker Brothers and with that storyline, and it all you know, will be revealed soon.
I'm so excited to find out about the wife and how that whole
thing
started.
The nice thing about doing our final season is there are no loose ends. You know, we really follow every story through to its conclusion this season.
The poster says it only ends one way, so I'm guessing everyone's dead.
that's one guess.
Maybe they've been dead the whole time.
You know, it was a big challenge for us, knowing that we were coming to the end, to make sure that we actually, you know, took it to its organic conclusion, took it to a place that we felt was satisfying, and that, you know, that also I think is going to defy some of the expectation of the audience as well. I've heard a lot of theories. Most of them are wrong. Most of them. I've heard a few real ones. So.
Oh, good.
And?
No, I'm just saying, good.
I just want to say
Job, he's back. We found him. We saw him.
By the way, he's alive.
Looking
good.
Hair.
And also, Banshee Babes, I'm sorry, Bunker Babes, I would like to confirm that was Tom Pelfrey's butt. Just FYI.
Yes.
The ladies at home are really excited about it.
No body double.
There was no body double there. But
yes. We don't use stunt doubles. We don't use body
sure,
doubles.
Many ladies and men are also excited about that.
You're right.
And,
sorry.
And we don't use Job doubles either. He was at the bottom of a pit with freezing cold water being spread. He insisted that be freezing cold. He was covered in mud lying at the bottom of the hole
shot
for about
of Job,
7 hours.
That overhead shot of Job in the
beautiful
dark
shot,
there.
By
yeah,
the way.
That's Adam Targum directed that scene as a second unit shot. But
I
it was... It's really, I think, my one of my favorite images of the season is Job lying there like that.
Oh my God, it really spooked me hearing him scream like that. And at first I thought it was a flashback to Burton and his torture chamber.
Where a lot of people, I was watching it with other people for the, you know, they hadn't seen it. I had seen it 157 times, but they honestly didn't know who it was at first. And we deliberately timed it so it was dark, and we obviously, you know, I think Hoon for 4 months growing his hair and his beard.
It was amazing because Hoon was around with us. We gave him a big heads up to start letting his hair grow in and not to shave and everything, but still having him hang out with us looking like sort of, you know, this old world, you know, Asian man when he's so clean cut all the time.
Yeah.
It was really odd, and then we all got used to him being like that, but it took some getting used to. And then at some point when he finally did shave and stuff, it was that was actually hard to get used to.
Yeah. Right. You know? I will say that this is a Job like any other character. You know, there's a certain transformation here, and he's a very different Job, and he's affected by things. But it's still, it's an amazing performance, and that also will spread out across the, you know, the remainder of the season.
I mean, if you're being tortured for 18 months, imagine
and we're going to get to see some of the nature of that torture and just how devastating and what exactly he went through. You know, the other thing that Hoon was very gracious with was if you have noticed, he has not been in the opening credit sequence for the first two episodes.
I didn't notice that he wasn't there.
Yes.
We took him out so
that we wouldn't know that he's going to be there.
Maybe he's not coming back.
Yeah. Yes. But he's back.
He's back.
For how long? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I was definitely glad to see him back. And I don't know, just something about that shot, which we found out that's what you directed, was amazing. But just from that image, I got something about like some sort of like brainwashing or some sort of place like that where
he's being washed in some way.
Well, he's being washed for sure, but some sort of place where they're like trying to recondition your mind or something, maybe.
We're going
to
find out.
Well, I think we should maybe move into predictions.
Yeah, before you do that, I just want to say, I guess not.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Now, you can say whatever you like in predictions.
It's magic.
I've got a prediction.
What did you want to say?
No, I was just going to say, in terms of prediction, how apropos is that, let's keep in mind, we just said that Lucas Hood was convinced that Job was dead, and we just found out that he's not. So the question is, how is that going to impact Lucas moving forward?
Yeah,
so
just something to look out for. Completely lose his mind, I'm guessing. Did you have did you have a prediction, Isaac, after the first episode of who done it, and then has that changed?
Yeah, I think Kai's got blood on his hands, something to do with Rebecca. I already said that. I also... the other one was like, where's Dushku? You guys cast her, we haven't seen her yet. Only have 6 episodes to go. It's a very bittersweet experience. Also, I just got that, Calvin Bunker's obviously making moves, and that's going to come back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah. His brother Bunker spent 2 months in the burn unit after that last incident. I don't even want to know what's going to happen. Maybe he'll get the same fate as Carrie's victim with the dick stab. That was good. I know that after the first episode, I was thinking that maybe it was Job had been brainwashed and was coming back, kind of like what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, really want a giant. So I was hoping it was Chaitin.
You were hoping the killer was?
He's dead.
Pretty sure he took a shotgun blast to the face.
Well, it can't.
But
I was there when we shot them. I'm pretty sure.
It was Job, because Job was still in that cell when the girls were killed. So that would be a neat trick.
Right? Well, I don't believe that anyone's dead.
You know what I discovered? Did you see there's actually a website laying Vegas odds on who?
No.
Yeah.
I got to show it to you. There's actually...
Are we allowed to bet?
I don't think so. We may have some inside information. it's interesting to see what people think. But here's what I will tell you, and here's the little spoiler. It's not really a spoiler I'll give you, is that it's going to take you a season, the entire season, to have all the answers. And really, we took a lot of care in making sure that we take you in a few directions that are misdirects.
But also the challenge of the season was, there's a central mystery that's tying everyone together, but ultimately... You know, we didn't want it to just become a whodunit, who killed Laura Palmer season. What we really wanted to do was get to, you know, strip everyone to the most emotionally bare place so that we could say farewell. And we want there to be a really strong emotional core to the season. So while there is the fun of the whodunit, you know, it's really just a device we used to really get to the heart of all our characters and gradually bring them to a place where we can make an emotional farewell.
And I was going to say, I think everyone has blood on their hands. In general.
Yeah, nobody's innocent.
There's no victims in BNG. It seems like a lot of volunteers.
Well, we always said from season one, there's no bad guys and good guys. There's just nobody's innocent.
Right. Yeah,
shades
exactly.
of gray.
I just feel like we probably have to at this point find out more about why Kurt is sleeping with his brother's sister or his brother's wife.
He'll probably never find out.
I don't know if he will find out, but we as an audience have to find out like why that started.
Well, you'll have to bring Casey LeBeau in and ask her. Maybe she knows.
Maybe she knows. Yeah. I mean, she's looking wistfully out the window at her children and, you know, husband, and like she's...
Listen, sometimes marrying a neo-Nazi is not all that's cracked up to be.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Just but how about boinking your brother-in-law, previous Nazi, now
obviously
PD
there's a tattoo fetish involved.
Major.
I'm going to tell you, things are going to get worse before they get better for the Bunkers. They are.
I have a feeling.
Yeah, well, we've got to wrap up, but I'd like to ask you both what you're working on now. Where can we find you? Where can we see you?
Yours is an easier answer.
Right now, I'm working on a show called Outcast for Cinemax, and cool. It's created by Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Starring Patrick Fugit. And
awesome.
Yeah, it's
that actually premieres the week after Banshee ends.
Yeah. Sweet. So hot. if you're watching Banshee, and I know you are, you're seeing all the promos for it. Mm-hmm. It is creepy and wonderful and not for the faint of heart, but I highly recommend
it. And are you on Twitter? Where can people find you?
I don't know. I think it's at Adam Targum. I'm definitely on Twitter. I don't ever remember where it is. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
That sounds right to me.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And Jonathan, what about you? Right.
I'm working on a number of shows, but the one that I'm most excited about is a show I've created for Cinemax called Warrior, which I'm doing with Justin Lin and the Bruce Lee Estate, which is a period piece involving martial arts in 1870s Chinatown, San Francisco. And
where will we see it? On Cinemax?
It'll be on, I hope that it'll, if it goes, it'll be on Cinemax.
I've read it and it's really good.
Fingers crossed.
We're still trying to get, it's an expensive show to make. We're still trying to put it all together. But with Justin Lin on board, and, you know, it's fantastic working with, you know, Bruce Lee's daughter, because I'm a gigantic Bruce Lee fan. Yeah. So it's we're excited.
And you're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. Yeah, because when I joined Twitter, I didn't understand you should just use your name. I thought it was like a sign-in name, so I'm just, I'm at J Tropper. Yes.
That's where you can find them, folks. Isaac, what about you?
Awesome. Well, Lily Simmons was cast in Westworld recently. That's
She's doing
for her.
Westworld.
And Frankie Faison just got his own show.
Yes, congratulations to both of them.
Congrats.
So really cool. With series regular for him, that's nice.
And everyone else is doing pilots and a million other shows. Mm-hmm. And
busy.
Definitely. Anthony's doing a show for CBS called American Gothic, and everyone's working.
Awesome. You can also follow me at Isaac Johnson on Twitter, The Isaac Johnson on Instagram. Also check out Cocktail Cinema. It's where we drink and talk about movies.
Great idea.
Can I get invited to
that? You may.
Well, I'd love to be a guest on that show.
I like movies and I like to drink, so
you learn how to make a cocktail, and you can also review a movie drink.
I am in.
I love that. And I'm Oriana Leo. You can find me on Instagram at Oriana Leo. And please support my new baby, which is Tilt by Oriana, my very own fitness business. Going to take over the world with that. Tilt by Oriana is on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to see the interviews on the red carpet from the LA premiere of episode one of season four, check out Red Carpet Report on their YouTube channel. You can see all of those there. Until next time.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Keep watching.
Yeah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Fancies forever!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.